Hello, I'm Scott Sock.
I'm Evan Novi Williams.
And I'm Michael Barr, and this is the Bloomberg Business of Sports Podcast.
He didn't do it again.
Didn't do it again.
He pumped his fist though.
Yeah, I saw it. Explore the big money issues in the world of sports. Several topics to talk about. Let's start with Take Two and the NBA.
Let's start with Take Two and the NBA. Re-up their deal. The key here, big money. I mean, it's the most popular video game out there.
Big money. Most popular sports
Most video popular game. Sports video game, yeah. I thought people would understand the genre we're in. Yeah, Fortnite, yeah. I know. $1.2 billion to the NBA and the players. Interesting part for me is that this is the biggest deal. Not the first deal, but it's the biggest deal done since the players took their licensing and marketing rights back. So part of that direct check goes to them, some to the NBA for the rights of the uniforms and the marks, and the ever-popular video game will continue.
Yeah, this is a franchise that's been around for 20 years. I was actually surprised. They sold 10 million copies last year, apparently, that outselling Madden, outselling FIFA. Both of those things surprised me.
Global game.
This is the most popular sports video game out there, which makes sense that they would also have the most expensive licensing fee out there. And from what the Wall Street Journal reported, that $1.1 billion may swing up or down. It's tied to the sales of the game itself. However, the trajectory that the NBA is going, the trajectory that the game is going, a small portion of this, and yes, small, the esports league that was launched around this game last year between Take-Two and the NBA, all those things I would think, you know, portend increases in sales moving forward.
I'm surprised that it really is superseding the Madden franchise. That really is doing something.
Oh, you're a football guy.
Yeah, I would think global has a big impact on that, right? I mean, the American football playing and watching, you know, audience is so concentrated in the U.S., whereas, you know, especially in Asia, China, India, basketball is tremendously popular.
Barrett, any trepidation ever using the word portend? I always feel like I'm going to say pretend. I know what portend means, but I still feel like I'm going to get it wrong. So I stay away from portend at all costs.
That's like one of those words, man, like quash and squash.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Anyway, moving right along. This one. Now we got a reaction.
There's Evan.
There's the Evan we know and
Evan's
love.
Evan's in the house. This does not portend well for the rest of the show, Evan.
Oh, boy.
What else are we talking about?
Ex-ESPN skipper, John Skipper. And
did you mean to do that?
I did.
Oh, okay.
That was really smooth. That was smooth.
That was, until I interrupted. But
yeah, well, yeah,
well, that's what I do.
That's what you do. He wants to be the Netflix of sports.
Well, yeah, Ira Boudway, our colleague, wrote a big piece for Business Week on John Skipper and where he is and what he's doing. And DAZN USA, it's a direct-to-consumer service. I had to ask Ira, I'm like, what is it again? How much? $10 a month.
$10
I forgot. Yeah, competing again with ESPN Plus, which is less expensive, but the thinking right now, they're building it around fighting, you know, boxing. And the thinking is, well, if you buy one pay-per-view fight, you're going to spend pretty much, you know, almost what the $10 a month would cost throughout the year. So you're amortizing it, and you get other events as well. So they're going to be bidders on big-time sports. That's what they're telling you, that live sports is their bread and butter. Now it remains to be seen, what else are they going to have? Long term, can they pay up? And well, is that where people are going to go?
He just paid up for Canelo Alvarez.
He did.
Yeah, they've certainly, backed by Len Blavatnik, mm-hmm. the Ukrainian-born media billionaire.
We're saying they're also selling the Perform Group, the other half of the business that'll fund it.
Yeah, came out of Perform Group, which is now two parts, DAZN being one of them, the other part being, you know, this media and data service that is, you know, contemplating a sale right now.
What do we say, about a billion plus?
More, probably.
We guess? Yeah, about a billion, one, five?
Right around there. Yeah,
okay.
But, you know, DAZN has proven in other markets to be more than willing to open a checkbook, to overpay just to kind of monopolize the rights. When they launched in 2016 in Japan, they spent $3 billion immediately on the Japanese Baseball League, the Japanese Soccer Leagues, MLB, NFL, Champions League, and the five biggest European soccer leagues.
And, of course, that gets you a relationship with the big – not that John Skipper doesn't have a relationship when he was
sure,
running ESPN
yeah.
with all of these people, mm-hmm. but it gets that business relationship going, chum the waters for when the U.S. rights are
there. Sure, and as Skipper knows – launching in Japan, where you could buy those things immediately with a lot of money, is easy, and launching in the U.S., where none of those things are available, regardless of how big your paycheck is right now, is a totally different thing. So they're chipping around the edges. You mentioned the Canelo Alvarez deal. There was a Matchroom deal in there as well. They're pretty entrenched in boxing. They just announced recently that MLB deal where they're going to create that Red Zone style, the kind of skip around show. On weeknights for Major League Baseball. All of this, as you said, Scott, gearing up for this time in the next 3 years or so when almost all the major sports rights in the U.S. are coming up.
The advantage for DAZN, as I would see it here, is that it's not Disney. It's not this huge corporate conglomerate. That's the ship, the ocean liner that has to take forever to turn around. DAZN, I would think, is much more nimble. They want to do something, go do it. Boom. One person says yes. Two people say yes, we're going to go do it. Things don't work like that at Disney. And Skipper knows that, and he's probably going to try to use that to his advantage.
I think it's a fair assumption to think that whenever the next time Skipper sits across the table and is bidding for a big piece of rights, he's going to be delivering fewer subscribers or viewers mm-hmm. than a lot of the people around the table, which is a disadvantage, right? We heard Brian Rolapp say on this podcast 2 weeks ago, the guy behind the money at the NFL, that when the NFL's rights are up, you know, they're not interested in more money for a smaller audience pool, right? They care so much about having distribution, being able to reach the most amount of people. I imagine for a long time that's a hurdle that John Skipper's going to have to overcome.
Scott's favorite word on this podcast, scale.
Reach,
scale, whatever. You got to be able to scale.
Two things. One, I should add that Skipper signed Alvarez to an 11-fight contract, $365 million for the next 11 fights for Alvarez.
Bien hecho, Canelo.
And he's in the running, apparently, for Triple G as well, right? So, I mean, between Alvarez and Triple G, those are two of, if not the two most exciting boxers right now.
Triple G's claim to fame, his real claim to fame? That his son plays against my son in hockey.
Oh, yeah.
Triple G son plays for the junior Kings, the junior LA Kings. I don't know if they're going to be at the next tournament, but maybe we'll see. Triple G was there, you know, so he was taking photos with some of the kids and some of the parents in Toronto.
Can you imagine a fight breaks out in the stands among the dads, and you square up against Triple G?
You don't want Golovkin, because Golovkin on the back. I'm like, stay away from that kid. That's not the one you want to mess.
Whatever he says, he's right. Yeah. By the way, real quick, can we retire the Netflix of moniker?
I knew Evan was going to do
it. It makes me so angry. We have the Netflix of esports, the Netflix of media, the Netflix of cars, the Netflix of... This is just a digital... This is what all TV is going to be in 20 years, right?
Yeah, but Netflix just raised its rates.
Oh, well, you know,
Netflix is the YouTube of Netflix, right? Well, yeah. It's ridiculous.
We've talked about that a lot, though. I mean, I have with our guests, right. The price point and the psychology behind the price point. So they've got them hooked. Now you raise the price. Very eager to see the attrition. How many people say, you know what? $13 too high. I'm very, very interested. Just a little pet thing here, the psychology behind the price point of Netflix. And those folks are like, I didn't use it this month, but it's $10. Okay, leave it. They see it every month. It's fine. But obviously they feel as if they can do this. Same as Starbucks. You got the people hooked on the coffee, so you raise a cup 5 cents. So what? The people are still coming in.
By the way, I like it when Evan gets salty, man. I like that. The nostrils flare.
It's just the next meter in the day. It happens a lot.
Yeah.
It happens a lot.
I'm very familiar with salty Evan.
By the way, on a human interest note, and to John Skipper, bless his heart, because he has picked it all up from one of the reasons why he left ESPN, because he admitted himself that he had a substance addiction. Mm-hmm. And he has picked it up, and he's moving on.
He goes in Ira's Business Week story, he goes in a little more in depth about the circumstances of his leaving and where he is right now about a year later. So if you're curious about the John Skipper's departure from ESPN, there is more in that story that you should read.
Let's talk about Nike shoes. Now let's start with this. What is this? What is this?
Nike is building the Netflix sneakers.
Evan was there, so Evan, why don't you tell me about these things you put on your feet?
Yeah, Nike this week at an event they billed as the future of footwear unveiled. What they see as the future of sneakers, and much like everything that Nike is doing, It is digitally connected. It is centered on getting you to interact more with the company on their apps, on their membership program, etc. The shoe itself, $350 basketball shoe. It has no laces. It self tightens with a motor essentially built into the shoe.
Hold on. It's time for old man Barr.
Wait a minute.
Chuck Taylor rolling over in his grave.
I'm just getting over that thing where we put the pump in a shoe, man.
Yeah, we're way past the
motor.
The Reebok pump.
We're way past the pump. Yeah, so the shoe self tightens. You can either do it with buttons on the side of the shoe or.
That change color.
Ideally, the buttons do change color. Or ideally, you open your app and you can tighten the shoe using your cell phone. Obviously, since it's powered, it needs to be...
Hold on, guys. Hold on. We have to stop the game for a second. Where's my phone? Hold on, guys.
It needs to be charged. So the shoes need to be charged on a charging platform every 2 weeks or so. Judging by your reaction, Barr, it's not for you. I think they'll be popular among some circles. It's certainly cool, right? The cool factor is there, and that's a factor that Nike prides itself in and likes to trade in.
Come on, say what it's really about. Give me the word.
Yeah, to me, the data is the big thing. When you buy these shoes, there's sensors in them, there's accelerometers, there's gyrometers. These things measure everything you do in the shoe, right? And if you're willing to share that data with Nike, Nike can see every time you're walking, every time you're running, the extent to which you're cutting, your change of speed. They know if you're a serious athlete or just an amateur on the basketball court. And that's important information for Nike, right? They want to sell you on the highest end basketball stuff if they know that you're a serious player. Or if you're just walking around, you might just want them for lifestyle and they want to sell you the lifestyle
just
stuff.
Just the fact that they'll have your name, what you have purchased in the past, your credit card.
It's on your shoe.
This is what Nike wants.
It can feed all that. It just contributes, again, to the datafication of what companies want. They want to know who they are, what they're buying, when they're buying, how they're buying, etc.
For folks who are curious, if you live in New York, Nike a couple months ago opened their flagship store in New York on Fifth Avenue. We talked about it on the podcast here.
Yep.
It's another, in my opinion, a great example of where Nike wants to be going as a company. You almost can't walk through the store if you don't have the app out simultaneously. There's so much about the experience in the store, and there are so many bells and whistles and perks and advantages that you get from shopping there if you are already a Nike member with the app. And this shoe is no different. You can buy this shoe and you can never download the app and you can just charge it and use the buttons and that's your experience. But if you're paying $350 for a shoe that has all this capability, obviously there's incentive in there to do more with it. And doing more with it involves interacting with Nike on a more granular level. And this is the big stat, right? Nike members spend 3 times more than non-members when they shop at Nike.com. So once they get you in the ecosystem, they're better at building loyalty and better at selling you product.
Well, what if you step in a puddle?
I think they're waterproof. I mean, I think they figured that one out.
Eventually, it won't be.
Good question. First question at the press conference. What if you step in a bubble?
It's the Microsoft of sneakers. Okay, see, now that I put it that way, I get your Netflix thing.
Big question was, can the battery run out while you're wearing them
and
then make
them
difficult to get off? And that's not true. They will automatically save enough battery so they will be able to loosen.
I'd like to see the data scientist take a peek at the accelerometer when Barr hits full speed. That's all. He's like, is he running? Is he trotting?
Battery's died.
Is he trying to catch the bus? What's this guy doing?
The truth is that, this is probably, as much as maybe the three of us are not the target audience, this is probably the future of footwear in a lot of ways.
No,
right?
Really?
And in 30 years, in 30 years, this might be the prevailing type of shoe, right? One that has no laces that you can tighten or loosen via your smartphone, which is always in your hand.
Barr,
anyway.
Let's do the conversation that we're going to have in the Soshnik household when he finds out about it. Dad, can I? No. There's the conversation.
Go back to Fortnite.
Yeah,
son.
Go play Fortnite. Exactly. Put the books away.
Okay. This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast. I'm Mike LaBarre along with Scott Soshnick and Eben Novy-Williams.
And that did, by the way, that was a nice segue into what we're going to talk about this week with Sean Bryan of Intel. So we're talking tech and sports. Just a little tease as to what we're going to have later on in the week. Because we are here each and every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday exploring the world of money and sports.
Join us again at the end of the week. As Scott just said, we're talking with Sean Bryan, who runs Intel Sports. Their endeavors in data technology around the sports world.
I can't wait to ask him about this. You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports on Bloomberg Radio around the world and online. with sneakers and shoelaces. Wherever
no
you
laces,
get your...
no laces, no laces.
And my shoes are. Where you get your podcast,
slippers,
we're available.
Slippers.